I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, normally, I think we're a little bit of a surprise to organize this as a special session of the Board of Commissioners. But that's what we needed to do, because we've got all the calls that kind of government. And so we have an agenda, and I think it's different than what we may have sent out. But I don't think we need to change this agenda. This is what we talked about. So I don't need to call for a motion to approve the agenda, but I think that would still be a good thing.
Make a motion to approve the agenda?
And I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Excellent. So, what we're hoping to do tonight is a little different than what normal court meetings are like, for sure. We really want to have a conversation about what's facing us and what we can do about it or need to do about it.
My apologies. People on the Zoom are not able to
hear. Okay, can I do like this when it does that? And so what we're hoping is that beyond the fact that we can just kind of go like that, that it's a special meeting, and really focus on the conversation that we need to have about this moment in time. And it is a moment in time, not only in terms of planning and the county's comp plan and the sub-area plan, but also a moment where it's all going to be different. The ferry traffic is going to be different. Oh, the population. The population in the Port District, which is much larger than the youth urban growth area, is, Greg, could you say those numbers again?
The Port District went from 5,000 to 7,000. The UGA.
The UGA, but over what period of time?
Six years.
6 years.
The last 6 years.
Which is a huge jump. And in the urban growth area, the 2022 census versus 2044, the county's target for our share of the population in Kitsap County, is going to double between now and 2044. I know I sometimes look around and think, but I want to be able to welcome this. And I think we can do that if what we end up with is better and better and better. And that has a lot to do with the decisions that get made over the next 2 years. And so with that, I want to ask Steve if you would kind of give us a quick county perspective here.
Well, I'm not going to give a county perspective,
but as a
Port Commissioner that's, and again, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Steve Peacock. I've been involved in the Kingston Citizen or Kingston Community Advisory Council for about 20 years, and I'm the ex officio member of KCAC, and so with the port's nexus with how we communicate with KCAC in a back and forth way, that's my role for it. And so what we're doing in relation to this procedure of the comp plan update and the sub-area plan update is that the Port of Kingston's main charge is economic development for our port district, which is way broader than the UGA. But the urban growth area of the county that Mary was talking about, you know, is just a small slice, if you will, of, you know, of our district itself. And it's why we became an evolved in the degree we did in regards to our charge, which is economic development. And so what we're presenting today and those concepts are merely concepts at this point. And, you know, accepting all of the comments that are going to be coming to the county, to the long-range planners, to do the next process. So what we've done thus far is just laying some general groundwork. And what's to come is an environmental impact procedure called an environmental impact statement. And that environmental impact statement will be the analysis of all of the alternatives. And so what we'll do is we'll take, the county is going to take a look at all of those alternatives in a comprehensive way, and they're going to work with the subcommittees and come up with a battle plan. And so that's going to be the procedure that's going to happen in the next iteration. So we're early in the process, and the port has some concepts, and we know that KCAC has concepts, and we know the developers have concepts. So that's what we're doing tonight, is taking a look at some of those alternatives.
Nope, I'm just trying to get this up so that Dave speaks. He's got something for it.
But you, do you want to wait till after Dave?
Sure.
Okay, so, sure. So Dave, you're up.
That was quick. Okay, in the last comprehensive plan in 2016, one of the things that was identified was committee had to be put together to address the barriers to development. And that committee was finally launched in 2018 and went into 2019. And we were tasked with removing the barriers to development in the UBC. And because there hadn't really been any significant development in that area for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And some of the people on that committee included Jet Wilkie, who's here somewhere, right there, and Betsy Cooper, and Jim Pavarnik, Johnny Walker, John Rose, Ken Hansen, Mike Brown, Rick Lanning, Beth Berglund, and myself. And from the county, we had Peter Best and Liz Williams. Mm-hmm. So a few of the major development barriers to development identified were parcels in the UBC, or the urban village core, which is this area right here. Everybody can see that, purple. Where that those buildings were zoned mixed use. And the concept being commercial on the ground floor and residential on the upper floors. From a practical standpoint, this limited the buildings to three floors or a ratio of 2 square feet of residential to 1 square foot of commercial. And this is simply not sustainable. Our existing downtown businesses at the time of 2,500 people were already struggling in the winter months. So forcing more commercial space into the UPC just didn't make any sense. More sustainable ratio for residential to commercial is kind of in the area of 30 square feet to one. So Bainbridge Island has a population of around 25,000 people, and they have a mixed-use unit right across from the ferry parking. It's a commercial on the ground floor and 2 residential floors above it. And as of Sunday, and they've been there, that building's built 10 years ago, something like that or more. As of Sunday, they're still 33% vacant. So they have struggled to try to keep that full. So Kingston simply needs more residential units and shoppers to support commercial occupancy. You can't just designate space as commercial and fill it up. The market, not the code, is what occupies commercial space. The task force suggested mixed use should be optional in the UBC zone and not by specific site. A compromise was worked out with the staff near the end of the process to have convertible grounds floor space should be limited to eastbound 104 downtown and Washington. And so keep in mind that that area would become more pedestrian friendly when the on-off traffic to the ferry moves over to First Avenue. Mm-hmm. So commercial space has four significant additional costs over non-commercial space, those being higher ceilings, fire sprinklers, ADA access, and air conditioning. From a practical standpoint, the developer of a convertible space would likely have to build initially the higher ceilings and maybe some of the ADA access requirements. Things like fire sprinklers, air conditioning, and some of the ADA requirements could be addressed at the time of conversion to commercial space. We talked about what was finally adopted was, down here on Washington, which have the convertible space, on the main route into the ferry, which would be the convertible space along Washington. So if we were to expand that, it's kind of like going backwards to where we were, and it should not be undertaken lightly, lest we again raise up the same barriers to development that we just removed before the pandemic. So we would strongly recommend a fact-based study should be conducted that should include comparable populations. And ground floor storefront space need not be all the entire floor, especially if you have deeper sites and are low population. A good example is what Rick built there in front of the Harbor Plaza. So another barrier to development was the requirement that any residential in the UVC zone needed to be attached or multi-use. Our task force advanced the argument that as long as the density requirements were being met, the county should not dictate what type of residential unit style. Let the market decide the product, and that argument prevailed in the use table. This brings us to the 1993 Kingston Design Standards. Our little city by the sea. I wanted to hand out something to the port commissioners. You've got one.
I have a copy.
Do you have a copy of this? The
Absolutely.
Whole thing?
Absolutely, yep.
Oh. Greg, do you have a copy of the whole thing?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Laura, do you have a copy of the whole thing?
Not sure if I do.
I have it. The reason I'm passing it out is if you try to find this on the county website, you'll see that it's there, but you can't open it. So I just want to make sure the fourth folks got one of those. So in the purpose of the design standard, which is in the page 4 right after the yellow tab, a quote, the purpose. The purpose of the following design standard is to help implement the physical aspects of the Kingston Community Vision for Downtown and the Kingston Sub-Area Plan. These standards are intended to promote Kingston's small town character, support economic vitality, while accommodating the impact of existing regional transportation and tourism issues. The intent is not only to provide some assurance to the community of the basic conformity to the vision statement, but also to encourage creativity, unquote. The task force supported this purpose by suggesting developers should use their creativity to implement performance-based marketable product that would fit the small town character vision and that met the density requirements. The developer solution might not be a ubiquitous or prescriptive 3 or 4 story rectangular block, but rather hopefully something more unique. Another barrier to development the UBC was the UBC's relative small sites. In addition to store frontage and density, they also had to accommodate parking on site and a 15% landscaping. While we were able to get some parking reductions with the implementation of the high capacity transit station area, and also by some adjacent parking and remote parking. Other barriers were addressed in the 2019 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Ordinance and Use Table. But before our work could be approved, it first had to be publicly vetted, which we did in Kingston, and presented to the Board of Commissioners in a public hearing. On April 27th, 2020, that work was finally approved, and they're in the notebook I distributed. You want to add anything, Beth?
Yeah, I just, I guess, you know, Dave mentioned the seven people who were on the task force. I just wanted to give people a sense of the involvement. I mean, we had two county staffers who facilitated every meeting. We met every 2 weeks for about 6 months. I mean, we spent dozens and dozens of hours walking through every aspect of what applies in the UVC, policy, code, use tables, everything, rigorously, and tried to explore all the different barriers that developers had identified with why, what was holding them back from developing in the UVC. So, and I also want to mention that, you know, COVID kind of put a pause on seeing what effect this had starting in 2020, you know, because we obviously haven't had a normal development time for business in 21 and part of 2022. So we're just now really at the leading edge of seeing what effect, what positive effect these changes are going to have on the UVC, and hopefully it will invigorate interest by reducing some of the restrictions.
There's actually 12, and if you recognize any of those names, you know it was a diverse group.
Yeah. And I also just want to mention this whiteboard hopefully is going to be helpful for people to keep track. We approved a 10-foot increase in the UVC as part of the task force, but it was 35 was the restriction. We moved it up to 45, assuming that there was a 10-foot setback requirement for any height above 35 so that it wouldn't be visible from the sidewalk. Yeah. So you wouldn't feel like you were walking in a corridor that was shaded from sunlight. So we really were sensitive to how that downtown UVC area would feel to a pedestrian, because we wanted it to be a very pedestrian-friendly corridor. And so that's an important part of the negotiation that we, you know, came to.
I kind of rattled through that any real quick. Is there any questions?
Okay. Did you have any other comments, Beth?
No, I mean, for anybody, I think people who are here know that, so the comp plan amendment work efforts have been following two kind of parallel courses. The port's been having meetings and task, you know, efforts to kind of pull their thoughts together around this amendment. And the Kingston Community Advisory Council has had a committee that's been dedicated, and we started in July of last year, meeting like either once a month or twice a month to really try to get ourselves up to speed. You know, it's no joke, this comp plan work. You know, us regular folks who don't do planning for a living, it is not an easy lift to understand how the comp plan works and all the different moving parts. So it took us probably the first 4 months of meeting to just understand what we were talking about. And we've got a long way to go from here. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Greg Ahlen, I'm Executive Director for the Port, and I'm going to read more of a prepared statement because I'm speaking in behalf of the Port Commission as well. But so the Port Commission believes we need both population growth and job creation. Both are important elements to a strong community and a thriving downtown core, and to comply with the Growth Management Act. So a lot of this is there's metrics from the, you know, that the county is being, you know, there's a lot of pressure from the state that you have to comply with the GMA, the Growth Management Act. And the two of the primary metrics are population growth and job creation. Both are going to contribute to each other's success too. So we don't feel it's an either or choice here. The Port Commission understands this community wants a vibrant, walkable downtown business district. We all have watched as it's degraded as businesses have closed down. So we believe redevelopment needs to happen. So the commission is concerned that residential development in the business district could supersede future opportunities for commercial development. For example, a seaside single-family housing was originally zoned for mixed use. Now that critical capacity on that site, which could have supported commercial or retail development, is lost. So the port has proposed some measures in the draft version of the sub-area plan impacting economic development in the core, downtown core. I want to emphasize it's a draft because the field is really wide open for discussion and hopefully a coherent set of recommendations that we can all support are going to be put forward to the county. There are many factors involved in promoting successful development, some of which are the transportation infrastructure, stormwater requirements, the speed of development to the point of breaking ground. In other words, the permitting process and the permitting requirements, utilities, design standards. Tonight, we're really going to focus on three things: requirements for retail and commercial on the street facing ground level, building height limits, and parking. We understand that if a commercial or retail is not required on the ground floor, then property owners will likely fill that with residential capacity. It's almost common sense. The risk profile is better for residential only. The cash flow and return on investment is much stronger for residential versus commercial development. So the concept of making commercial use optional at the outset and hoping that in the future it will be repurposed from residential to commercial on the street-facing ground floor is a risk. And it's a risk that we're not sure we can afford to take. So that brings us to the question, how do we maintain and enhance a commercial development in retail space along Main Street, SR 104? How do we achieve a thriving urban village we all desire? So I would like to introduce Charlie Wenslow of Wenslow Architects, who the port has been working with in regarding our port properties and development, and has worked with the cities of Bainbridge and Paulsville on these same issues to take the discussion a step further. Charlie, if I may.
Great, hi. For those of you, I think I know some of you in the room, for the rest of you that I don't know, I'm an architect and I've worked in Kitsap County for about 25 years. And my work has been primarily focused in downtowns, the Bainbridge, Silverdale, Paulsbow, and a little bit of work in Kingston. So I'm very familiar with this whole concept of preserving the character of a small town as it grows and trying to think about how do you grow a small town to accommodate the challenges that we're talking about that I think were really well articulated from a developer standpoint, but also thinking about community values and what Kingston has said they want to be as a community. So one of the things, so I want to talk a little bit more about Paulsbow and Bainbridge specifically about how they've dealt with the issue of retail in their downtown. But before I do that, Kingston's uniqueness and identity, I think, is the downtown area. And it attracts visitors that come here to walk, see the downtown. It's also an asset for the community itself. And I think, by and large, over and over the last 10 years, the community has said countless times that this small town, walkable downtowns, a vibrant Main Street are really important. And I think the thing that makes that successful is retail. People come here to window shop, to go to restaurants, cafes, and if that is diminished or not revitalized, I think it's going to dramatically affect the well-being of the community as well as just the economics of the community. So two examples, Bainbridge Island has a vibrant Main Street downtown, Wenslow Way. So today I went into the code for Bainbridge and for Paulsbow just to kind of look more closely about how they do it versus what's currently being done in Kingston. So Bainbridge has a mixed use town center concept, and in general, you can choose to do commercial, you can choose to do residential, or you can do mixed use. It's not prescribed. You get to pick the match, the mix you want to do. The only street on Bainbridge Island that you have to do retail is just downtown Main Street, Wenslow Way. And it's about three blocks long, so that is the only place in the code it's required. Any other site that you build on, there are no conversion requirements. You don't have to build in 12 you know, foot first floor and it, make it convertible over time. So it's pretty simple, pragmatic, but it does maintain the presence of the retail. And retail does happen in other places, so don't think it doesn't happen throughout the town. It does, but it's if you choose to as a property owner. Polsbo has a similar but slightly more complicated approach. Polsbo on Front Street, everybody knows Polsbo's Old Town District. So what they created was what they call a shopfront overlay. Marla knows it. She used to probably help create it. And so for one or two streets in the downtown, primarily one street in Old Town, retail, ground floor retail, is a requirement. However, what they did in the rest of their commercial district, the C1 district, is they have that convertible ground floor requirement. Mm-hmm. So if you're not on Main Street and you're on some other street, then you have to build it so it could be converted in the future. So that's how Polsbo did it. Now what's interesting is you come to Kingston, and if for some reason I have part of this wrong, please correct me because I'm not an expert on Kingston's code. But Kingston, as I understand it, either has now or is contemplating that retail is not a requirement, but the conversion approach is what you have to do if you aren't choosing to do retail. The problem I see with that, the challenge, and this is what we kind of need to talk about tonight, is the market right now is going to encourage residential. And the last thing a developer wants to do is to build a ground floor and have it sit empty. You know, so when you talk about things not penciling, that's what doesn't pencil, is a store sitting empty, and nobody wants that. But conversely, imagine, and this wouldn't happen overnight, but imagine over time that residential always was the preferred use. Well, eventually, and I'm not trying to be draconian or scare people, but imagine that nobody really did choose to come in and build retail. And maybe one of your most favorite storefront sections just became all residential. So not only could you have a site, an empty site built out with no retail, you might actually have retail disappear and be placed by residential. So I think this idea of the conversion, convertible ground floor, could be dismissed, isn't necessary. And just simply I don't want to say it's my recommendation, this is what we were talking about this morning with the court, is that I think an approach similar to Polsbo and Bainbridge really makes a lot of sense to think about, can we dedicate, what streets do we want to dedicate to have the retail on? And there are probably ways it can be done that aren't draconian. I mean, it doesn't have to be the whole ground floor of the building. So, like the one of the best buildings in downtown Kingston, how deep is that building? 15 feet deep?
15
the,
maybe,
did you do those, Rick?
Yeah, Rick built those.
Yeah, they're what I call liner buildings, and they do a fabulous job for reinforcing Main Street. That isn't a lot of retail space. And I would further argue that I think this whole conversion concept could just be dispelled with for all the other areas and potentially save the developers that added cost of building a 12-foot ceiling. So I'm not trying to solve the problem today, because there's a lot of thinking that has to go into this. I think I'm just trying to emphasize that retail is really important for the community of Kingston and just the ongoing economic vitality of the downtown. So I'll just end my comments there.
Opportunity for questions?
Yes.
You used the example of Bainbridge Island and Polsbo in terms of retail only in those specific areas. Mm-hmm. Could you go back in time and what did they look like 20 years ago? What was the code at that point? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's fair for Kingston to be compared to where Bainbridge Island is today. So what's the timing? Do you have any feel for that?
Yeah, well, I've worked on Bainbridge for about 20, 25 years, and they've had, since it became Bainbridge Island, the city, they've had this mixed-use town center code, and it's been in effect all that time. I don't, Marla might know better what Polsbo's code was, but what's interesting about Polsbo's, physically, it's unchanged. I don't, there's been very little redevelopment over that time period, and that's part of what we're talking about, is, you know, there hasn't been an incentive to come in and do it. But that retail, I think, largely has stayed filled in spite of, nobody came in, fortunately, to tear buildings down, and I don't know what the county code was or Polsbo's code at the time. So I don't know how it's evolved.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can we confine ourselves to questions of the speakers, and then we can go into talking about what we think?
Yes, I wanted to follow on Jerry's question. If you could address the kind of the whole chicken and egg thing. So you build retail, but if you don't have people walking in your downtown, you don't have customers. But if you, what I hear you saying is that it, then if that is residential, you have the customers, but that has kind of pushed out the retail. So how do you deal with that? That seems to be what we talk about all the time is...
I think that when you have the choice to buy and build in the downtown, it comes with responsibilities to the community, and it's based on what the community's vision is and what they feel is important for their downtown. And if you feel that retail over the next 50 years is important for the downtown, then you need a code that supports that, or it will disappear. You can't just leave it to the marketplace to decide what Kingston's future should look like.
But how do we turn that into a, to success, I guess, is what, when we see the businesses start and fail and start and fail, and for a number of reasons, but oftentimes it's just, they just don't have the customers. How, that's when I talk about the chicken and egg.
I think housing is a big part of this. So that's the nourishment for the downtown and the businesses. So. Mm-hmm. If we see Kingston over the next 15 years develop several multi-story residential projects, if the port is successful with their project building down on the waterfront, all of these things are going to catalyze and sustain the retail. So I'm not an economist. I'm just saying from what I've observed in other places.
So I know a lot of people in here know each other, but I think when you get a chance to talk, if you could say who you are first, so that anybody who doesn't know you...
Nancy Lambert, yeah. Yeah. She knows you.
Hi, I'm Glenn Hutchinson. I'm new to the community. I'm also on the KCAC group. A question for you is, in the development, one of the things that we love about this area in some of the smaller communities you mentioned, and I'll throw Port Townsend in there as well, is that there's galleries, there's eating, there's lots of other fun retail things to go. Is it realistic for us to think that we could have the, and I'm with you on the having the retail development, but it sounds like we need residential development too. Is the developer going to be inclined to want to build retail on the bottom and then provide some residential above there on our main streets here? Do you think that's a reasonable concept, you know, for us to go forward to try to develop a life here in Kingston?
There's probably several people that have answered partial to that. Charlie, Rick, Dave, I don't know who else, but... Let's go ahead.
Yeah,
and
I'd rather let the
toss it in.
Developers respond.
Okay. Yeah, I'm all ears. So, like what Charlie's talking about, a long-term keep a commercial base, because that sounds so pretty, doesn't it? All, we look like Polsbo, we look like Leavenworth, we don't have that population base. We've been talking about this since 93, it's 2020, that's 30 years. Not one thing's been built. The only things that have been built is the Firehouse Theater and the restaurant. My little stores, none of it's been profitable. All of it's lost money. And it's all just been subjectively lovely. So we all like it. Now, I own property right down here with the Red Line District, and I can't build commercial space to answer. I can't build space that costs $500 a foot, which means rent would have to be $5 a foot in a town that pays $160. I own the biggest building in town for 25 years. I had 10,000 feet, which is the Harborview Plaza. I was never full for 25 years. I was never at 100% capacity, and my friends that own it now are not at 100% capacity. We've lost hope. In other words, we have a 30-year track record of really going nowhere. So it was bad enough when the line got drawn here in the last part of the comp plan amendment to say those streets are going to be ground floor commercial for all the good reasons Charlie and everybody's talking, the port. But the bottom line is I own the parking lot across from the park. I'm this age, and I'll just tell you, that will mean in 30 years when I'm dead and gone, maybe when there's enough bodies here, someone will build what we're all talking about. Because you can't build something that costs you $1 million just so you sell 8 condos when you should have built 12 condos, which is what Charlie's talking about. You have to hope that, yeah, you did all residential and it's worth so much money and people will pay so much rent for commercial that we're going to gut these apartments and we're going to turn them into storefronts. But you can't be Bainbridge Island and have, you know, 10 stores that have been vacant for pretty much the whole life of the project unless you're John Rose or you're that, you know, you're Pope and Talbot. You can afford to hold that. Nobody can borrow money from a bank and prove on paper that they can get $4 or $5 a foot for rent. Yet that's what that footage costs to build. So you can, I'm scared enough that it's this big. And if the port's proposal says we're doing the whole core, that's fine, do it. And we'll all be dead and gone, and maybe our grandkids might see some stores come in. It's been vacant for 30 years in front of the grocery store. The Seaside development is vacant. I don't even know if that'll survive as a residential project, let alone if we said that whole face should have been commercial. The lumberyard sat there vacant for 10 years, and finally somebody put in a gym. Cool. Finally, something's happening. So I don't know how far out we're all looking, but I got the feeling it's way out beyond all the lifetimes here. And if that's the purpose, then great. Let's all get behind it and stamp it. But it's in 40 years. Because we got 30 years of track record here since the 1993 design standards. We got no proof.
So, okay.
And one more point about single family homes. When you take the UVC circle and you go up past 2nd Street, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, all the way up there, and you got little houses and little mobile homes. And we had a fight through the 2016 where they shut down the single family homes. We got that reversed in 2020, and I built 3 homes on Illinois. 3 cute little homes between 5 or 10 other little homes. And it's beautiful. It looks really nice up there. I was perplexed in 2016 because they would force me to build a 6-plex in between normal people's normal houses. So are we doing that also? We're going to rule out single family homes up on 3rd Street so we can densify? Or we meet like what we changed in the code. We got rid of the maximum, we got to the point where you just had to meet minimum density. So if you want to chop it all up into tiny little lots and put 6 houses there, you can. But if we're going to say we're not having single-family homes and you're going to build apartments next to your neighbors, little tiny cute houses in Kingston, we're going to build little apartment complexes in the middle of them. I can't see that being responsible either. Anyway, that's my pitch.
Seems that you have anything
more to add. Well, Rick's got more skin in the game than I have. Well, we did 3 projects, and they were largely driven by passion as opposed to return on investment because we believe in Kingston and we wanted to do something, being part of the task force and everything. We put our money where our mouth is, but, you know, they're not money makers. And more developers are going to be making decisions on money than they are going to be on the Love Kingston.
I'm Ron Karsmar. I just live here. And I'm just part of the public, and I look around, and I think a lot of us are. I talk to all of the neighbors up and down the street here in West Kingston and in town. I think all of us would like to have a nice, vibrant downtown. And I think some of us are becoming aware of the fact that there's some hurdles that the developers need. Mm-hmm. And I have to commend the people that have spent so much time doing the things they needed to do. When I first became aware of this, I called the county. This is back when Peter Best was there and Liz Williams and all this. And I would read the amendments, and it, when it, we eliminated the mixed use, it said we're going to eliminate it, but we're going to encourage its use. I have asked the county so many times, how are you going to encourage it? I have never got a good answer. But since you're here, Charlie, and the developers are here, I would like to know, can the public help get the encouragement necessary so the developers can actually do what their heart and soul wants to do and make the pencil work, whatever that means? Is there a way that people can be encouraged to do what the public would like?
Well, I think, and again, it'd be a really interesting conversation to how you can find that balance point. Because it's not going to be 100% one side or the other. You know, it's always about compromise and finding that right balance. But just as I was listening to the barriers you guys were describing, if, for example, if there was a mandatory storefront zone, the city of Kingston or the county, I'm sorry, could say, we're not going to make you provide any parking for that. And some developers might say, well, it's not going to work if I can't put parking in, but there's flexibility you can give. Parking's expensive. I don't think the whole ground floor should have to be 100% retail. If you're talking about that, you can successfully create that retail frontage without a lot of depth. So there are ways to accomplish this. And the other thing that I think is simpler in what Bainbridge did is, well, I won't get into that, that's too much policy stuff, but I think there are ways you can tweak things to make it work and be less of a burden on a project. So, but again, everything costs money and it's risky to do any development, even if it's 100% residential. So even those projects have risk and barriers too.
Yeah. Tanya's been trying to get it. Tanya?
We own, my name is Tanya Issa, and my husband, I own commercial property in the downtown, and we have had a plan with John Rose and Pope and Talbot to develop a parcel down there into 48 apartment units, but with the height restriction lifting or increasing, you know, that makes it pencil out a little bit better. But we've certainly been watching these, and I'm not going to speak for John Rose or Pope and Talbot. One thing I want to say is that the developers of Kingston are in this room.
Yes.
They're not from Lynnwood, except for the property here that's kind of failed. So in terms of us being well-meaning, we are. This is mm-hmm. our community. It goes without saying that we live here. You know, we shop here, we eat here. I've been here for 13 years now, having moved from Issaquah, but my hope is diminishing, you know, as a commercial property owner. I see the buildings I own and the buildings that other people own just have revolving doors of tenants coming and going who can't afford rents and who don't have customers. And even my own store closed because we didn't have enough business to support it, even before COVID. And it was a passion project. I agree with what, definitely with what Dave said, and I agree with what Rick said. I also want to say that there is this holding pattern that we've been in Kingston for too long. As Rick mentioned, that holding pattern is going to go on for so long. The mention of the realignment, very different to Polsbo and very different from Bainbridge. Think about the noise that comes from the ferry traffic. When those motorcycles get off the ferry, because I own the old Kingston Hotel, you know, 5:45 in the morning, if that whole area is developed into residential, it may not be that attractive. I believe that that area would be better served as commercial in the long term because of the noise. I don't think it's going to be so, and it's very different from Polsbo, obviously, and even different from Bainbridge because of the distance of that noise. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really seen that contemplated, but if you did a decibel study and you were monitoring that, it would be shocking. I mean, it's really, really loud, and anybody who shops in downtown Kingston knows that. So, you know, as a property owner that's right there in the corner, and also somebody who's on the other side where traffic currently goes, who can make a decision to build or not build? Is the alignment going to happen? Is the realignment going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Well, that's a very important decision to make. So we're very much constrained by this holding pattern. you know, I've sat on so many committees, you know, I've just about given up. You know, every once in a while I'll write something here or there. I try to stay, I read everything, but I don't go to the meetings all the time anymore because I've spent so much time, and I've spent way less time than many of the people in this room trying to, you know, move these things forward. The height, increasing the height restriction is great. That's very exciting. We do need, as a business owner, I own Kingston Mercantile Marine, which is now closed, but we were one little business, and Henry's and us and the pet store, we would feed customers to each other and down to the few businesses in the downtown area, but we all knew that we would have been better off if we had three times as many businesses, five times as many businesses. So I know that there is a need for retail, but the problem is the state is holding us up from making these decisions. And, you know, I can't just say, hey, you know, I love Kingston, I'd love to live here, I hope my kids decide to raise their family here. But, you know, as well-meaning as I might be, I'm going to be charitable and build this building and it's going to sit empty and, you know, not pencil out, because that's going to put me in a bad position. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it makes Kingston look terrible. All these empty businesses, these revolving doors, and it's been going on for the 11 years I've lived here. So, you know, I don't know. I'm really happy to see some of the changes. I think it's great. I don't really, I'm somewhat ambivalent because I do see both sides of it. But to me, I can't make a decision with my properties because I'm waiting for the state. And it may not happen in my lifetime. You know, it's been a long time. And as much as I jumped in to try to help push it forward by being on some of these committees, and then I kind of gave up a little bit, the people who are still pushing it are still getting these weak answers. Is it going to happen? You know, maybe it's going to happen. We see little surveys and studies and, you know, drawings of traffic circles, and here we sit.
So I ask a question of Tanya relative to what she just said.
Yeah, I'm just going to just ask one question. When you talk, or a comment, when you talk about the state, you're talking about the whole question of the realignment.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the realignment. And John Rose and I are going to meet in the next couple weeks, and we're going to look at our project downtown, which is well sited for residential, and knowing that, you know, it's the offload that makes the noise, because the zooming, you know, motorcycles, unless they find a way how to, you know, to control that. I'm not sure what that might be, but, you know, we're going to look at how some of these changes in the comp plan might help our project pencil out. We would love to see, you know, 48 or 60 apartments, you know, however it works out in there. But there's some other things with the county, with, you know, sewer and stormwater that, you know. So that project may go forward because of these recent changes in the comp plan. And, and, you know, I certainly would be open to retail there. But in terms of anything on the other side, it's a crapshoot. And, you know, all those properties could be torn down, or we've got a parking lot that's owned by the state. But with the noise for the ferry offloading or the potential realignment, as an unknown, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. Why would you spend money? I mean, even as somebody who's passionate about Kingston, wouldn't do it.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
Tanya, I just want you guys, you and Pope own the biggest, widest chunk of these red line districts. When you guys, and John and Mike have so much, you know, they got a ton of experience in building out these kind of properties. When you guys are sitting around talking about a 45-unit thing, do they say, oh, this is no problem, ground floor commercial all across that red line of your two properties? Or will that actually be a barrier to the project? Or will they build 45 units and be cool with probably vacant space for 15 years?
Well, you know, we slowed down. You know, we had a plan, and we did some artistic render, some architectural drawings, and we were, you know, trying to move forward, but it didn't pencil out with the height restrictions, and even with the articulated fronts with the 45, it still didn't pencil out. So we just kind of said, okay, let's wait and see what happens, and then COVID hit, lumber prices, you know, everything. So I, you know, John is the perfect person to speak to that. I just basically have a great window seat into what's going to happen, and, you know, we're going to help fund, obviously, this project. But, you know, maybe John will speak about that in an upcoming meeting once we have a chance to sit down. But as it stands right now, we still would love to see that developed, and that would be a great contribution to housing. My own mother, who's 80, what is she, 83 now, she's saying, when are you going to build my apartment? She wants to live there. So that makes me really anxious to get going. So,
I have a question. Can I ask Tanya a quick question? is your property in the UVC or in the Lindbaugh commercial district?
No, it would be the downtown, the red. Yeah, so we're right next to Shannon's Flower Shop and next to the nail salon. Yeah, so Pope owns that one, and then we own the house that's currently a rental house.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you also own the Mercantile building?
We own the Mercantile, and we own the L-shaped lot next to it that connects to the Village Green on the backside. And I would love to see housing, you know, go in there. I haven't bothered to do any studies to see what could go in there. I threw it out there to the Affordable Housing Group because it would be so great to see families who could walk to parks and schools. And, you know, it wouldn't be us doing the development. It's just not our forte. It would be, you know, us funding it, but and, you know, participating in it, but not as the actual developer.
All right. Tim Davis, Trish and I are residents for 5 years, and I'm on the KCAC, Trish, on stakeholder. And I'm curious, with two developers, I don't know if there's others that are local, when we talk about the slow burn of retail development and success, what is your opinion of the impact that 725 homes in Arborwood are going to be on that retail front?
I bet a lot of people have some reaction to that, so any of you that want to chime in, feel free.
I just want to point out, I believe that Arborwood is planning for some retail in Arborwood, so that is a bit of a detractor, you know, from them coming downtown, because their convenience places are going to be right there.
They're not planning that.
Oh, they're not? They changed that?
Yes.
Okay, because there was at one point they were discussing
commercial zone that just got moved, and what they're going to do with that is create essentially a public park with the commercial zones.
Good. That's
yeah, that's recent. Okay. Hot off the press, I might say.
Ooh,
it's just it. We're here.
That is the potential to double population kids.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So,
Jet has something.
Jet.
I'm Jet, and I sat on that committee with these guys. And I never got the sense that we were trying to get rid of commercial in the downtown area. I think we were just trying to make it easier to develop some of the lots that were down there that weren't being able to develop, like what Rick said, because of the cost. And for me, I worked at the Kingston Inn when the Hofers owned it years ago. And we had this boating community that would come over just to go to the Kingston Inn, just to hang out in downtown. Yeah. We don't have a hotel downtown. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything like the Kingston Inn downtown anymore. So we've cut, to me, we've gone backwards, you know? And I've been down in the summertime downtown, and when people come across the ferry, and because I'll ask them if I'm standing in line for a crepe or something. Oh, where are you from? Oh, you just walked across on the ferry just to hang out in Kingston? That's cool. But there's nowhere for them to stay. There's nothing to keep them down there. Mm-hmm. So they're just there, you know, to what for an hour or two and then get back on the ferry. And as far as the residential that's been built that has failed, you know, I have a lot of clients that were just clamoring. They wanted to move to walkable downtown Kingston. They're older, they're downsizing, they need one story. They can't do two or three stories with stairs. This residence over here, you know, that's filled up with a waiting list. Why can't we get more of the stuff that people want and are demanding and are asking for, you know, instead of doing silly stuff? And I thought the port was talking about building a hotel way back when I sat on that advisory committee, like in 2015, 16, I don't remember. We were talking about a hotel. So if you're thinking about economic development, I feel like we should think about what kind of economic development is smart to bring people here and want them to hang around in downtown Kingston, because that's what's going to help the commercial, not worrying about whether someone builds a residential house on Main Street or on 104, because why would somebody do that? I mean, I wouldn't, but I understand. If you want to attract and keep the retail, then let's add some stuff into the mix that's going to help support that. I think is more important than arguing about whether someone can build a single family house or not.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to bring into the conversation, because when the idea of what the UVC task force did in allowing more flexibility for that first floor commercial convertible, I was like looking around to see like, was that a crazy move? And over the weekend, there was an affordable housing panel hosted here by the League of Women Voters, and Mayor Wheeler from Bremerton was one of the presenters. And he actually, I have a recording from the Zoom part of that, where he mentions that Bremerton has also done exactly the same thing in their downtown cores. They had vacant commercial space, so they lifted the commercial requirement so they could get some momentum going in that district in Bremerton. So it's, we're not super crazy for having done it. And, you know, it's, you know, just the reality we're facing is you know, you gotta build momentum somehow, and that was the concept that the team kind of came up with for trying to do so. And I do want, also want to mention that this this affordable senior apartments building right next door, mm-hmm. people aren't aware, that's a 45-foot, you know, this design district is a 45-foot,
right.
And so that building meets that requirement for 45 feet of height.
Okay. So this question is for you, Charlie. I would agree with you that downtown Winslow from the police station over to Madison is excellent. Now, they don't have the kind of parking requirements the county puts on for Kingston. And they don't require the storefront zone to be as extensive as what's being proposed here. This is proportionally way more storefront frontage than Winslow has. So, you know, if you wanted storefrontage here, proportionally, you're more like what's already approved for this area on Washington and 104. You know, for all intents and purposes, Winslow is just along Winslow Way and
it's
a little bit of
Madison.
Yeah.
4 blocks,
yeah.
And I don't want to give the impression that we have this solved. I think this is just to identify perhaps the importance of it and how is there a path to achieving it, and if so, where could you do it? Mm-hmm. And one other thing that I just wanted to point out too is in Winslow, you did point out that whole project directly uphill from the ferry terminal that has languished since it was built. The retail's never been very successful there. One, it wasn't required. I think they did it because they felt it was the right design solution, and in 50 years it probably will be. Right now, it hasn't done well. So it's that's kind of the challenge, you know, because eventually there will be retail across the street. And these cities, Kingston, Poulsbo, Bainbridge, they develop over 10, 15, 25, 30 years. It's a really long, slow, incremental process. And the other one thing I wanted to say just in response to you too is I do think Kingston is extremely lucky that the developers are locally based. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is just a huge asset to the community.
Yeah.
So.
On that, another really important distinction between or among Kingston, Poulsbo, and Bainbridge, we are not a city.
Right.
We are beholden right. to Kitsap County.
Yes, understand.
Right. And I can tell you, right now, as somebody who works with schools and school funding, we have been waiting a year and a half for Kitsap County to approve two accessory gyms for our children to have lunch in, because they don't have a lunch and a gym. And they told us it's not even in front of you. It's been a year and a half, and we have a very short window of construction available because we've got kids in the summer. That's commercial construction under Kitsap County review. That's not the same as you experience in Bainbridge or Poulsbo. So even if we made a decision and got something approved today, we'd be sitting here for another 2 years before you could shovel a piece of dirt. And that's really unfortunate. And I don't know how or where that's going to be addressed.
One of the components of the port's proposal, proposed policies, is that the county have an expediting task force for Kingston. Probably won't happen, but we think it's important because it's exactly true. How long is it going to be between the day you decide to do it and the day you actually turn dirt?
Yes. So.
I just had a question
to the developers. I mean, it sounds like there's not the demand for the commercial, and there hasn't been for a long time. Is there a demand for the residential? I mean, what do people want? We're regulating supply, but we have no control over demand. We seem to be going in the opposite direction.
Jen is a real estate agent.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, so we're pushing in the opposite direction. Yeah.
Right. Could you say that loud enough that I could hear it?
Oh, big demand. Big demand.
For residential.
I don't think they want to be right on, 104.
No.
Walkable downtown, single floor.
And this pencils out because of, land grants and the Department of Agriculture and a lot of other things. And it's a beautiful building, and yes, there's a wait list, but we need way more. But there would have to be some really crazy things happening to make another building like that pencil out.
I got a question for the port. Okay, so we're talking about developers looking at their dirt, looking at money, trying to figure out how it pencils. And over the last 20 years, before and after all you guys and different commissioners, we've gone through these hotel studies. We've gone through these restaurant studies. Ron, everybody's tried to pitch something in the port. But guess what? The port runs the math and it don't work. So they don't do it. Have never done it. And my thought is just like what you guys just brought up about senior housing, public money, government money, it's a winner because no one's making any money. I would propose, as much as the port wants to dictate what we do in the district, why isn't the port looking at, I'll build a restaurant, I'll build a hotel, and I know the port's not going to make any money. We're going to have a 0.5% return on our investment. That's doing something for the economic development of our town. On you, your money, our taxes, build it. Don't make any money. You're not here to get rich. You're not here to make money. But your economic development. But the same thing we're pitching to us, the people, the port has never been willing to do themselves. That's why the restaurant is, we used to have Dickinson's, Kingston Inn, we had six bars. This place was ripping. And it all fell apart and burnt down. And now we're sitting here 30 years later, and it's like, go get a couple million dollar loan, build a restaurant, rent it for the break even. Put it in the town, put the little hotel. We ran numbers on boutique hotels. The port couldn't make it work as a profitable business. Yeah. That is not a profitable business, but it's a wonderful thing that we have in our town.
Yeah. One of the barriers to that, I'll just explain one thing that, of several things the port has done thus far, that we're getting to those next phases, is if you look at the map on the wall over there, see the port area is all gray?
Yeah.
That's no longer the case.
Yeah, it's not.
Because we went through with the county and we posited a variance to create all of a consistent UVC zone for port property as well. That was a barrier because when we next went to the next iteration to think about, what can we do to redevelop? It was precluded in that particular zone. It couldn't have been done. And the other port commissioners in the past, have been gone and nobody looked at that as a barrier. So we have started. We're positing another minor change in relation to where our current upper parking area is, which is currently zoned for low housing, if you will, low zone residential. And that doesn't pencil out for the port either. So we're looking at, we've got that in the works right now as part of this comp plan update to rezone those areas as well. So that will be an area that potentially could be that spot for the hotel or the place for a large restaurant or those ideas of a destination place that people that are on these ferries could go and where our local people can go as well. So We're in it for that. That is exactly what we want to do, is a very significant, you know, commercial venture for that area.
Yeah.
Hi, Glenn again with KCAC. As part of KCAC, one of our things, we are passionate about the character of this beautiful town. And I'm really curious, you were very passionate in your answer when I asked my first question, and the developers here, the people who seem to really care, in your vision, what do you see that we need to be yelling at the community or at the county as to what they need to do for us here? Can you maybe, you seem to be a developer and you are too, can you take a few moments and let us know, because Beth and I are on the Environmental Land Use Committee, we're on KCAC, we're a voice to our commissioners, we are here for you. Tell us what you want.
What Mary said, if the port is able to be an expediter, what Jet said, you know, a building, beautiful housing buildings like next door with a long wait list for our seniors, you know, a very, you know, vulnerable community, but also we have tons of families that are being displaced by $2,000 rents for a one bedroom.
Yeah.
We don't have enough housing, and with the interest rates, you know, the way they are, that housing is going up. But we can't be talking about this 5 years from now with no new large building for housing going up. We need more multi-family housing, I think. I agree 100% with what Jet said. And I would love to see if it's the port or some body be an expediter, because we're very much disadvantaged because we don't have the form of government that Bainbridge and Pulteau have. So we really have to be careful when we compare ourselves, like, you know, apple, you know, passion fruit.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, apple, orange, passion fruit. We're just so different. And those are the constraints that
would
kill us.
Are you engaged with having some retail mixed in there, too, to give our community some
fun things to do? We do need retail, but we need housing density first. As somebody who had a business and I was losing money before, you know, the pandemic, and I kept my workers on and paid them and kept losing money, and then the pandemic hit, and then it was, okay, I think we've had enough. But, you know, unless we have more people that live in town, especially in the downtown, who can walk, it's just never going to work. It's just never going to work. We need dense housing.
There's a parcel, right? You walk through this parking lot and walk about 50 steps where the old daycare is, and then she's gone now. So here's a perfect example. That doesn't need to be commercial, and nobody would think that needs to be commercial, but it is high. It's set up for high density. So you're bringing up something about what can they do? What can the county do? I asked Dave this today. I've been about almost a year, trying to get answers and get into, I'm going to build 2 8-unit buildings, put in 16 units of apartments. They can qualify, like Tony said, lower income. Right here, walk to the library, use right there. It will take me over a year to get through an A cup and, you know, X amount of architect, 10, 12 grand worth of civils, $6,000 permit I just paid 2 days ago. I'll be lollygagging around for 1 year until they can even say, yes, you can do that. Because it's not even a permitted use in the core, and yet there's one. I'm right there, but it's not permitted use. So I have to go through this long term. And so we can talk all day long, and in 2 years from now, I'll probably break ground. I got an empty daycare. It'll just sit there and grow weeds, and in 2 years from now, you'll see me tear that house down, and I'll finally build 16 units of apartments. And 1 year later, they'll be built. So that's something that's engaged, and I'm writing checks on right this minute, that in 3 years, we'll be an apartment complex. And I'm pretty sure everybody in here would like to see that little apartment complex over there.
It's a nice building, too. I've seen the architecture.
Yeah, but it'll take SDAP permits, A cups, then all the stuff. It took me 9 months. This thing we did reduced parking in the core by something, but they didn't pin it. They made it, like, subjectively administrative. In other words, ask us and maybe we'll tell you. That took about 8-9 months for me to find out I could live with, like, 3 less parking spots. So they lowered, you know, a year of getting a decision, a year of getting a yes, a year of permit process, a year of building. And then you can create some apartments in our town. Yeah. So everything drags out. Steve,
what they do in relation to they, I'm speaking as a board commissioner,
yeah.
is that, you know, that The way that land use, general land use, is done in Kitsap County in certain areas and certain kinds of developments do trigger an administrative conditional use permit, and it's basically a land a shortened conditional use permit where neighbors are notified, and it's a mechanism for notification, essentially. So that administrative conditional use permit is the first layout of the project so people can understand, oh, this is what's happening. And so that's a use table thing that could theoretically get adjusted.
Yeah.
Because there's no real reason why you can't do your associated land use in the site development permit that's being posited. So those are barriers to development that should also be looked at here in relation to the use table. The use table controls what kind of overarching permit might be necessary for a particular development. So just a nuts and bolts of land use.
Rita Nicholson, as far as helping you out, the last time I checked, my property tax pays for their salary, right, at county level.
Sure.
Couldn't we, as a community, petition and say, we need this for our local residents that are being displaced? I mean, signing a petition.
I think part of it is, this is the petition, change the comp plan amendments. I don't think you can get a special variance to say, hey, could you just give this land use issue a break on this piece of land and let me do it? I don't, there's not much of a process for that. It makes sense, it's common sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can all sit, Steve works there, right? He solves half the problems that ever come up around here in town because he wears so many hats.
Yeah.
But it's, I know, but I mean, because you're trying to grease the wheels.
Yeah.
You're trying to somehow make it work.
Right.
You know, and fill it, you know, here, this is just stuff that's redlined in changes from that one thing. That's just changes.
Right.
That isn't the code.
Oh.
You know.
Permitting is a problem.
Yeah, a couple of comments to Jed, you know, and Rick, I'm sorry, Jerry Kirshner. Rick brought it up before the hotel, almost 10, maybe 11 years ago, was it, that when we had the Economic Development Committee for Kingston, the county funded $10,000 of a study for HVS for a hotel here in Kingston. Some of us put up private money to top that off to 11. The study came back saying, Kingston's not ready for a hotel because people come here and there's nothing to do. Mm-hmm. I think 10 or 11 years later, we're in the same place.
Exactly.
Nothing's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we really need to look at, how do we get more people? To me, it's, you bring more people, people are going to demand more. The demand's going to drive what happens after that. My personal feeling is, where we are now with restricting development for retail, to me, that's putting the foot on the brakes when we should not be doing that. We should be going the other way and saying, hey, maybe 5 years from now it'll be a problem, but right now we need development. The other thing, so that's my spiel on that, but there are two other things that Greg brought up. One is the height, and the other is the parking. We've talked about the retail. Can we spend a little bit of time on what the height benefit is, and also what the parking suggestion is?
Another statement that the group that's working under the KCAC to look at what changes we want to recommend to the county, we have been talking about suggesting that the Lindvog Commercial District allow for more height. So that is part of our conversation. We think that's the place where we would embrace a lot more height allowance.
Could you define the Lindvog Development
District? Sure. It's this red block behind Dave. Dave, you want to point it out? So, yeah, and it's that pink in there. So it's basically like Lindvog Plus on the west side, and then it goes up to, what's the street that it goes up to?
288?
Yeah.
Not off to 272nd, right?
Yeah, there you go. It's that, it's essentially commercial, commercial zone, correct?
Yeah, it's the commercial zone. But right now, it's limited to 45, and that's where we think we do 55 plus. And allow for...
On the other side of Lindbach, though, not on this side of Lindbach at all.
Both sides.
The commercial district covers both sides, because Lindbach is this road, so...
Yeah, I see it now.
So the Cove is in the Lindbach district. And then this kind of undeveloped space on, opposite the Cove is just ripe for like an apartment building, you know, and we could go really high there, and it wouldn't be seen as like creating this little weird corridor for pedestrian experience down here. So here's where we like that old town feel, and then up here, we think that's where we want like that more dense, high dense, higher height kind of development.
And then you could also, in the UVC zone that's outside of, you know, where this revised highway is going to go, you go that way as well, kind of northeast, in the purple zone, that's a no-brainer for raising that height.
But the touchy thing about that area is you've got that view issue for people who are looking down into the Puget Sound, and then you start putting height in there, and you're just gonna end up with a lot of heat generation from people's views being obstructed by buildings. So that's just, I mean, it's just the reality of that location, which wouldn't be so much so true up in the Lindbach commercial district.
So parking is directly tied to building height. What you can build is what you can park, and I think all developers understand that equation. Even if you get a lot of extra capacity for height, you still have to increase your amount of parking to support it. So one of the benefits of going higher is you have more units to offset the cost of underground parking. And one of the things I've observed over my career on Bainbridge is I have two categories of projects, the ones without underground parking and the ones with. And I'll tell you, the ones with underground parking are probably 1 out of 4 or 1 out of 5. They're very, very expensive. Yeah. So I'm just trying to paint the picture that as we think about more height, it does start to require underground parking as a possibility. The other thing that I think Bainbridge has done, and a lot of communities are doing this now, they're really reducing their parking requirements. You can look at some communities that just completely leave it up to the developer. No parking. You put in whatever you think it's going to make your project viable. On Bainbridge, if you're within half a mile of the ferry, you get a 50% reduction in your parking requirement. So I think one of the things I would strongly encourage, if you don't already have it, and I apologize, I don't know your code very well, but to reduce the parking requirement to no more than 1 per unit. And that is a huge catalyst for development.
We have a high capacity transit zone, but came out of the 216 Mimic Group task force, but it doesn't reduce the parking that much.
Yeah, we're still sitting
a little bit.
It's 2 per unit. That's
two.
So that's
yes, parking.
But the Cove doesn't require 2. The Cove only requires 1.
For some reason, those guys got away with some land use that none of us know how to read.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm building 4 houses over here. They just tried to tell me last week that I needed 3 per house, and then the garage doesn't count. But the garage didn't change in this comp plan. I only need 2. I don't need street parking. I don't even have a street in front of it.
Yeah, that changed. That's one of the changes in 2016.
That was my letter last.
I think though the recommendation, you have to look at the parking, and there has to be a recommendation, and it has to be pretty concrete. When we met with Rob Gelder and Aaron Baker, they said we want really specific recommendations, right? But it's also a policy document. So it's kind of, you roll it up from what the results you're trying to get. But the way when I talked to a number of developers on Bainbridge, and I asked them, I said, hey, how'd you make this mixed use work? And they had underground parking. They said, well, the parking's a loser, and it's a bigger loser now because it's much more expensive than it was when we developed this. The condos on the very top offset the parking loss. So anything you have in between the top floor of condos that are high end and the parking, that's the only place you might make margin. So you better have it full. And that's basically how they put it to me. And that was, so if they have, you have three story, they said, so if you do, if you go up and add one story, you might have two floors where you could, you know, pencil it out. Now, this is just really rough. It's just really rough way of explaining it to you, you know, because it really does get down to the nitty gritty on the costs are just through the roof right now, right? So there, a lot of things that you used to think you could do a pro forma and come up with, I don't know how you do that anymore exactly. And then time kills. Time kills anything. I mean, because it's going to kill me. So the way I look at it is, if you really want to do something, you have to be able to move at the speed of business. So how do you do that? So I'll just give an example why we posited, you know, in here, talked about permitting. We talked, what happens if we funded or funded half of a FTE at the county, and they would take our stuff and they would put it on the, that would, they would have to address our things first if we're paying for them. We had our own full-time employee at the city of Seattle, for example. So everything we had went right before me immediately, and then they processed that, and then they went to any time left over, they could work on all sorts of stuff, anything out there, right? So somehow, so that you get through this, of course, they have to have authority to be able to make decisions and, you know, be able to move it forward. But that would be, that was something that we thought, okay, well, maybe the port can help fund something like that. You know, one of the things, the feedback we got was, hey, you know, with the level of services that Kingston gets, it's a net loser for the county. Okay, so, and I can appreciate that. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I really don't know. Because we also positive, we put forward, well, look, we want to start, you have to fund these things. Where's the money going to come from? So we said, well, and they said this is going to be a poison pill for anything that we put forward just to qualify this. But we said, hey, how about the taxes that people pay in here, a portion that gets directly reinvested back into Kingston specifically for development, for infrastructure. I don't care if it's sidewalks, any kind of a barrier that you say, okay, this is creating a barrier. They weren't too keen on that. So I look at it, you know, I always want to have my hand out. You know, you have to step up too. You know, we have to figure out if we generate much more tax revenue and there's things that we can do that really actually help generate and pay for itself, then I think that that's a lot more appealing. So you do have to really kind of look, hey, what are these developments I give to the county? And then, but we know that there's some things that are just killers. The permitting costs are very expensive. The time is really extensive. I think it's not a normal time because of 3 years of pandemic. I'll have to say, like, it just is very difficult. There's a lot of people who've moved jobs. So Liz is gone. Peter's gone. Peter's over on Bainbridge. Liz went back to Indiana. So you lose continuity, and that's actually really hurts. So even the dialogue, when we started off, we thought, okay, we're going to segue from that dialogue with the DCD. So we just have to come up with very specific things that you guys think that you want to make hard asks, whether it be parking, relaxation, eliminating parking. So I would say on the storefront zone, I would say, look, we were thinking, okay, we're going to have some retail on some sort of area, whatever that may be. So you could say the downtown is only a couple of blocks long or whatever it may be, but something has to be set aside. Or do you not want to have, what do you want to have for a town In over the really long haul? And I'm not here. There's both things can be right. You can say you're not going to pay for it, which is, you would know. But you also say, hey, I want to have a character for the downtown. And that's what everybody we talk to be honest, when you reach out and talk to people, they want to have a vibrant downtown. And you have to have stuff to do. So you got to be able to, you got to hustle and be able to fill it. Like, I look for commercial brokers. There's almost no commercial brokers in this area. I don't even know who to talk to. I try to get, there's only a couple of them, and one's on Bainbridge. So you're not, it's not like I don't even see the energy, to be honest with you, which is kind of, you know, surprising. So, but I do think that we have to come up with some specific things, and wherever they are, then we need to codify them. Like, even for us to do development, that restroom, we were going to go buy a restroom, put it in. The restroom doesn't meet the design standards because they're so restrictive. And so again, then you got people and they're trying to make decisions on their own to get a permit, right? And they're kind of going like, well, I don't know if I have really authority. So we ended up having to go to Charlie and say, can you design us a bathroom for the park?
Woo!
So he's pretty excited about it. So there's things like this where you realize it when you go through the process. So I would say, like, take one of those real life things and say, this is something, for example, and then what is the solution?
Great. I mean, you don't go backwards. We already identified some barriers.
we shouldn't have to go back to those same barriers again. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the development of almost every little town in America,
yeah,
they all start out with converting a little house to maybe a dentist's office or an architect's mm-hmm. office. And when the demand for property gets so high, that gets leveled and you put up the commercial space. That happens all over the United States. So to start out that way and not fill it, isn't that a lot worse?
I'm not, as a landowner, I said, believe me, I would be of the, I said, I'd be exactly of the same mindset. You got to make it pay or it's not going to happen.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Rachel, do you know how many square feet of commercial space we have in Kingston? I'd be curious, like, what do we need? If we just look at what are the needs, you know, currently, obviously we have too much empty commercial space. But if there is a requirement to build more commercial space, you know, at what point will that be needed or be used? And if we look at Poulsbo as a comparison or Bainbridge, how many square feet of commercial space? I'm sure that the cities keep that as a metric somewhere. And how much do we have currently?
I mean, just for context, and I know I shouldn't keep talking about Bainbridge, but I will. Think of the scale of that whole island. It's 13, I don't know how long it is.
13 miles.
There's three blocks of required frontage for retail.
Yeah.
On that whole island. Anywhere else you can do whatever the hell you want.
An average income.
Just keep that in context as we talk about this concept of whether or not it makes sense to have a storefront district. It's not miles and miles of it. It's very potentially discreet.
I think the representation, the problem with that representation, that was just basically took the parcels which could be subject to something like that and then said, okay, if you're going to do 104 or Main, because that's the kind of seem to be from all the stuff I read and people I've heard, that's kind of where they think of the actual downtown district. What would you want to try to keep that retail to some extent if there was redevelopment or, you know, what do you want to do?
But you don't just draw it in, right? You get some facts to support it. And if you answer Tanya's question, I don't know the number, but I do know that you need about 30 square feet of residential to support 1 square foot of commercial. Mm-hmm. So we could calculate it out, and it's nowhere near what's being proposed here.
Yeah. And as a commercial property owner, it's less attractive to me to see new buildings go up with new commercial space because it devalues my empty commercial space. Yeah. And if my stuff's going to sit longer, you know, empty much longer. It's tricky.
I want to just bit my name. Nancy Langworth, stakeholders, I guess. I want to go back to what Jet was saying and Rick. You know, back when we did the hotel study and we had the Economic Development Committee where we were trying to figure out how you get this, we're spiraling downward and how do you turn it around and get it spiraling upward with, you know, being the kind of community that we wanted. So we did the hotel study. We also had Roger Brooks come in, who's a town developer. This was back, I don't know how many years ago. What did we decide? 2013, I think, 2014, whatever. And he came in and he actually, we had him come in and look at all of North Kitsap. This was the North Kitsap Tourism Consortium brought him in. And then he went to each one of the towns, to Bainbridge and Poulsbo and Kingston, and looked at each one of us. And our goal was to market North Kitsap, because none of these little towns had enough to market themselves. So we would pool our money, pool our advertising, and get some kind of coordination among all of the little towns in the area. And that included Port Gamble. I mean, you know, both tribes, everybody in North Kitsap was participating in this. And when he, you know, he had a different impression of each area. When he went to Poulsbo, he said, get rid of all of those sandwich boards. My God, you can't even walk down the street. So, you know, that was kind of something that stuck in his mind. Becky Erickson wasn't happy about that, but, you know, that's just boom. And when he came to Kingston, he goes, you guys got the most expensive parking lot in the world. Cars don't need an ocean view. You know, can't you do something about that? And then we talked about how do you try to develop a small town like this? And, you know, we're not in the middle of nowhere. We're on a very large ferry route, you know, so we've got people coming in and out. We can get people here. We can get them to go. But there's a process. And we try to start that process. But it's very hard to do in a community that really doesn't have a leader, that doesn't have a mayor, that doesn't have, you know, other than we've got the port and we've got the park and we've got Commissioner Gelder. But nobody's really focused on developing this town, you know, from a commercial standpoint. So we can build it, but I'm not convinced that we build it and they will come. That what he was saying, if you have, you need a destination restaurant, you need destination retail, and if you can, and that's where, you know, what Rick was saying about the port, you know, can you build us something? And that then starts to bring people. And if you've got one restaurant will beget two, three more, and the more restaurants you have, the better. The same thing with retail. One successful retailer will beget a whole bunch more successful retailers. So that is kind of the spiral that I don't think we've been able to really get going to make every, you know, to make successful. So we just keep, you know, we get pop-ups and then they die and then they pop up and then they die.
Yeah, and kind of, in my opinion, the McMossback was kind of an example of like, it was a people were coming to Kingston from Mossback, you know, which when they decided to close, it was like a shock. And like, you're the most successful restaurant. You know, so that's an example of a place that chose a house, you know, to make their business in, which, you know, is a case in point that's not a barrier to commercial.
Yeah. Well, we do have more developments that are laying out there, I will say, for population, for increases in population. And we do have a lot of new commercial, tenant improvements that are going on in some of the buildings that we're kicking up. Uh-huh, exactly. So there's a lot of excitement, I think, in the town, and maybe part of it is, you know, the Arborway development, possibly, but there's other things that are happening too in relation to housing. There's a large piece of property just in the urban growth area that is it's kind of a multifamily sort of zone, if you will, that's just outside of town, and you probably have seen, some of you have probably seen that on Facebook, where there's something that is going to be for sale, and it's a rather significant hunk of property, so... you know, I think we are getting people in here, and we're the town, you know, of Kingston is getting noticed. But it's
there's stuff that people don't know about, even my friends. But there's like five national companies that are all up in our grill here, in different people's faces and their lands and. They want, and that's different than me going, oh, I'm going to build this condo project, and I'm going to put some commercials in place. Let's just say that's a failure. That doesn't mean, you know, T-Mobile's not coming, but they're going to come right at a certain spot, or they're going to come to a piece of dirt and say,
absolutely.
I'll go to that landlord with that dirt, and they'll build their building and their product. So on the positive side, there are some things coming at us that we haven't seen before
right now.
Yeah. And they'll show up in the next 2 years. We'll go, oh, that's weird. You know, but those are the things that can, those things require bodies also.
Yeah.
So those national guys, they're not thinking about, oh, it'd be so great if this town of Kingston built out commercially. They're saying, let's get in there early, let's set up shop, because we're really hoping on their population growth.
Yeah.
We're sitting around going, let's just do population growth, man. Let's stuff them in here somewhere. and those other things will happen.
So. I think to that, to that, one of the problems with this comp plan iteration that's before us now is typical comp plans have been reviewed at a 6-year period. This is a 10-year period. So it is a conundrum, you know, for us here too. This is part of it, yeah.
You know, in the comp plan, I'm Mark Libby and I'm with the Parks and Trails, so different perspective. When we talk about the comp plan, it's pitched to me as being Vision 2044. It's not being, hey, these are changes we need to make to the use table now. It's the look down to hopefully, we're gone, but hopefully when we have the critical mass to become an incorporated city. Where do you want your sports complexes? Where's going to be the retail shopping? Is it going to be out there at Miller Bay and 105? Or is it going to be someplace else? So it needs to have that, the comp plan needs to have that longer term.
Some of that fleshed out, yeah.
The thing is, a short term document is something like this design criteria, I think. I should ask the county. And the use tables. They can be amended to say, hey, what do we need in the next 10 years? Whereas the comp plan's got to be looking out farther. Am I off base with that?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. And then I had another question for the port. When we talk about Kingston, we've got all these small lots. You heard Mr. Lanning talk about taking the three tiny little lots and getting three narrow little buildings on. What can be done to amend the platting that was started in 1890 to aggregate some of these pieces of property to where they're sufficient size to support the 16-unit apartment, small apartment complex, or even the triplexes and stuff like that.
There's even barriers to that. One of the things of an 1890 plat is that we didn't have cars in 1890. So we have a whole bunch of spots in the urban village center area where those right-of-way areas for where you park your horse and buggy are being vacated to the adjacent property so that they can then combine those properties, and then they don't need that little pony road in between. So this is what we have to contend with.
Is there a plan to go through and identify those and how that can happen? Or is there a process with some entity that can buy units or get options on lots so that they can be combined?
Well, the right-of-way areas of those narrow little what would be
alleys,
you know, an alleyway, if you will, they have to be vacated through Kitsap County Public Works. So there's a vacation process to remove that area.
Yeah. So when you ask Andy Nelson, the head of Public Works, about that, he says those are easements that the actual property is owned by the adjacent lots, 50-50, and the county just has an easement for their use. Does there need to be a...
That's what the vacation is for, is to remove...
Just to remove the easement.
Yes.
Okay. It's fairly easy if the adjacent property owner, it doesn't go anywhere, one, and the adjacent property owners both want to do it.
Yeah, right.
Oh, is it like a boundary line adjustment kind of thing?
No, it's a right-of-way vacation that's through public works.
And just have you both have to hire an attorney. You have both be willing to do it.
Out of curiosity.
That was Ron Carsmore, in case you
know. I'm the same guy that said that
before. You may have changed your name.
Well, but you would have known. When I looked at the people that you invited here, because that was pretty comprehensive, the DCD was invited, and I'd like to know, other than the commissioner who's not wearing his county hat, how many DCD people have come to this meeting?
We have two that are online.
Yeah. Colin was here.
Colin dropped off a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Colin participated on behalf of the county because Eric is out of country and Commissioner Gelder wasn't available, and we were also like, kind of, it was suggested like we didn't necessarily want county officially necessarily participating. So
we
want
to be able to go to the
conversation.
This is what Kingston wants.
Yeah.
And
so,
not have them have seven alternatives that they get to choose. Mm-hmm.
So
that's what we're trying to start now.
So Beth, when the county is approached with whatever comments we want, is through the KCAC? Is that, are you going to be the one that drives whatever the public wants, or the...
I think the county's going to have a role in helping us try to find some way to reconcile the perspectives of the port and the perspectives of the working group under the KCAC, and see where we can identify common threads that we can advance.
We hope to go as a united
in unanimity.
Yeah.
So there's time left to do that.
Eric Baker has been participating in all the meetings when we've asked him to participate. There have been discussions where we've said, you don't need to participate in this, we're just going to have kind of a
a gory discussion about like what we want to see. But whenever we want them to participate, they participate in our work group meetings. So yes.
Nancy.
That's a point of process. So I think we're supposed to finish up at 8:30.
Well, we're supposed to finish up at 8.
Oh, it was supposed to be 8. Oh, well, I was giving the same 30. Well, two things. One is those that organized it.
Yes.
Are we meeting your objectives?
Yeah.
And second is, where does it go from here? And I hear so many discussions. We talk about the same stuff all the time, and we just cannot overcome the inertia to get something going in the way we want it to go. So what is the plan to move forward from here?
Well, I think we probably have three different answers on that, or more, but, which is Kingston, right? But our thought was that, when I say our, the port's discussion of this has been that we need to not start all over again, but hear again what people want, so that we can play a collaborative role with KCAC as we try to develop a set of policy recommendations that are sturdy, that make sense, and that we can all support. Mm-hmm. Recognizing we won't all like every little bit of it, that's what grown-ups are about, right? But I think that's what we're anticipating, and that this isn't the end, that this is a beginning.
And I know Tanya has a comment to make. I just want to assure people that both proposals, the port proposal of the storefront district and the proposals that the working group under KCAC had prepared for the February deadline for getting major concept changes into the county, both are pursuing a parallel path in terms of the environmental impact analysis. So the county is looking at both scenarios, and they're going to do an analysis on both, but obviously their preference would be to have a common proposal from Kingston, not to that they have to then figure out which goes forward. So, but Tanya, you could have
a... So this discussion and the changes of the comp plan come amidst the Governor Inslee and the state looking at getting rid of single family housing. So again, going back to the county, a huge rate limiting step. If homeowners are allowed to have more ADUs or bigger ADUs, or developers are coming in and buying these houses and tearing them down and putting a quadplex, that is going to be a tremendous amount of work on the county, and they're just not staffed. And so, sign me up to start attending meetings with our county commissioners, especially knowing that we have a new one coming in. You know, what is the plan to address this? Because look at Linwood, there's building all over the place. We have people in town who work for planning in Linwood.
Yeah.
And they see it happening, and they come back and say, what the heck is up with Kingston? I don't want to work for, DCD in the county, because they have a lot more freedom to do and see things actually happen. Mm-hmm. So, what Nancy said about the inertia, there is a degree of inertia that comes from the county because they're not staffed or because of all these changes. I don't know what it is, but that may be a good place to look at comparing what works in Bainbridge, what works in Polsbo, what doesn't work in the county, what are these limits that constrain us from actually having houses where people can live, and actually kids that go to wonderful schools with wonderful educators, and classrooms that are full, because that's also what we see, attrition in our schools. That, to me, the top of the list is getting the county staffed to meet the demand, because it hasn't been for many, many, many years. And I don't see it. I just don't see it. And getting a different answer every time, not helpful.
Not helpful, totally.
The number of times I had to go to someone really knowledgeable who I knew by name, because, I'd met them in a meeting, and get the expert answer, and they had to untangle all these, arbitrary complaints just because I picked the phone and asked a question and it got put in the workflow. That taught me never call the county and ask a question on the phone, because it's going to get put in the workflow, and then 8 people have to sign off on it before you can get an answer, and then they've got to arbitrate. So that is not good. And even that workflow at the county, even though a study was done by UW School of Business to look at expediting the permit process years ago to change it from a year and a half to 4 months, well, I don't know what happened to that, because that's not what happens is happening today. Mm-hmm. And that was a robust study that was done. Look at it. You know, they did a lot of work, and they had beautiful workflows, and but yet, where are we? I'm sorry to the people on the county, you're all well-meaning, on the phone from the county, you know, great, you know, well-meaning individuals, but just understaffed, and a lot of turnover for key, you know, people that could make things happen a lot quicker.
Yeah,
I may suggest that the KCAC meeting, and Kate, you guys can chime in here too, we're, what, every month? And typically we've got, well, it's been, Commissioner Gelder has been there, and we always have open public conversation time on our agenda. That is a great time to come. I mean, Kate, maybe you want to let everybody know when we actually meet and all that.
This is.
I agree, but I just also want to make the reality comment that as of May 23rd, that game is done. As of May 23rd, the other two county commissioners are going to start an appointment process for someone who could come from Paulsville, who could come from a whole lot of different places. Bainbridge, and not really care much about Kingston. So that is part of what put some fire in my belly about getting coherent so that we can say this is what Kingston wants, to the extent we can.
So I've been taking notes, and there's things that I think fall into the bucket of consensus opinions about what possibly are doable positives that we can both be pushing forward with. And then there's what will require some analysis is, you know, where is the, based on what we heard tonight, where's the where are the differences, and make a list of those, and then I think we'll need to just kind of work through those differences and say what really is essential, what would be nice to have, et cetera, and try to find compromise points. So we're having a work group meeting tomorrow afternoon at our 4 o'clock. We'll probably be doing some debriefing on what happened today here, there, and then I think we'll just need to come up with a plan. For what do we think is the next step? But I don't think any of us came into this meeting pre-deciding what was going to be the second step. Oh, we just wanted to get through this, and then figure it out.
So I've been to a lot of meetings, and after a while, I got kind of frustrated that nothing was happening. And to go after what Nancy's asked. What's next, and who's going to coordinate that? This is the best meeting I've seen in years, decades, and I think I'm overwhelmed that everybody has a chance to express their opinion. The problem is that there's a big wall between here and the county, and I don't see that being breached. I'd like to know what the next step is, who's going to lead it, and who's going to be our leader. Maybe we need a mayor. I don't know.
Be careful what you ask for.
The whole compliment process is not that we don't have any unilateral authority. We are making recommendations to the county. Yeah. So what this is feeding is what that recommendation is going to look like to the county.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of angles that are opportunities. But if anyone in this room thinks that, you know, by meeting with the county, we can change all the things we struggle with here, that's not reality. But what we can do is we can try to recommend things that could make a material difference and write it in such a way that the county is like, yeah, that seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we can do on that. Mm-hmm. So that's our goal, is to come up with things that are actually reasonable that the county will actually put into the Kingston sub-area plan. That's the work of these two efforts at the court.
And by May, I think May is when we want to have a recommendation summit.
I think because things are going through the EIS now, mm-hmm. we have until June mm-hmm. to actually come up with a consensus agreement on what we want these sort of things to look like between the two entities.
Yeah, very good.
I think it's really important that Kingston has one voice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to speak with one voice.
Yes.
I
know you do. So who's our leader, Nancy?
Yeah, I know who, not me.
Well, I think that I suspect that the team that put this in place, Port, KCAC, I think we'll figure out where we go from here. That's my sense.
And we could do another one of these kind of discussions.
I think another discussion meeting like this would be helpful, very helpful.
But the question is, what will we focus on in that meeting?
Right.
I think that's
that
what we don't
come out
know.
Of this, your notes will
yeah.
get a sense of that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and
this
and
has
I
been,
think those are the categories right there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And this has been recorded on this via the Zoom. And so there's people who weren't available to participate who are going to want to do that, and then they'll have their own input as well. But yeah, let's call it.
Let's call it a day.
Our next regular meeting is Wednesday,
April 26th at 6:30 p.m. A hybrid meeting here, and with that, I will request
I make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second. All in favor?
No, I agree. Open public notice act, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, not a problem.
Yeah.
I'm retired. I started hauling down the trail from my house. I'm 15,000 pounds an hour.